Reading from Sri Bhajan Rahasyam by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. We're discussing this verse from Shikshastakam, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur comments on. And he explains that this verse Lord Chaitanya spoke is all about ruchi. That one who is attaining taste from chanting Hare Krishna, Nam Ruchi, he calls this Ruchi Bhajan. They worship with taste. Worshipping and serving the Lord with taste, with ruchi, ruchi bhajan. So he says that one who has ruchi or taste, actual taste for bhajan, he loses his taste for bhojan or material enjoyment, because he's relishing spiritual enjoyment just by serving Krishna and trying to please Krishna. Krishna is reciprocating with his attempts to please him and serve him by giving a taste. Because the taste is Krishna. And all rights reserved. Copyright reserved. All rights are reserved with Krishna. He reserves the right to be tasted or not be tasted. We cannot force the taste. If Krishna wants to give us a taste, he gives us a taste. If he doesn't want to give us, he doesn't give. It's his right. But he's very compassionate. But when he gives it, it's a gift. When he gives a taste, then we experience it. We experience happiness by doing service, by chanting his name. That's his gift. That's his reciprocation and love. When he sees that our own love and our own desire to please him is becoming pure and unmixed with karma and gyan, and unmixed with material desires, anyabhilashita shunyam, and not covered by other pursuits like karma and gyan, then he gives a taste. So there are several verses in this chapter describing this taste that one gets by chanting Hare Krishna. And these verses are all Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary on this shloka from Shikshastakam. Nadanana janana sundarim kavitam va jagadisha kamye mama janmani janmanishvare bhavatad bhaktir hoitikitai. O Jagadish, I do not desire wealth, nor followers, nor do I desire beautiful poetry, or liberation to the higher planets. O Praneshvara, my only desire is to have unalloyed devotion unto your lotus feet, birth after birth. So one of the symptoms of ruchi or nam ruchi and nam bhajan is that one is very eager to hear about Krishna, great eagerness to hear about Krishna. That means one is very enthusiastic and eager to read about Krishna. Not that they have to be prodded. Someone has to be prodded or forced or coerced or coaxed. Please read, please read, please read. One actually, he has a natural liking to read about Krishna and hear about him. So this is actually a symptom that one has ruchi. Although one can have a type of ruchi even at the level of anartha nivritti, one may be overwhelmed or surrounded by so many anarthas, obstacles to devotion, material desires and illusion or ignorance and aparad or different things that are there in anartha nivritti, laziness, lack of determination, so many different anarthas. But even in that stage of anartha nivritti, one may, by good fortune, have a taste for hearing, has some eagerness to hear about Krishna, and that's called ruchi abhas. It's not really the full ruchi which we're describing and Bhaktivinoda is defining and explaining in this verse. But it's a reflection. It's not the real thing. It looks like the real thing. It's just something like the real thing. It's like drops. A sprinkle of ruchi. But the full ruchi which is what we've been explaining, is quite a different entity. So he cites a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, 4th canto, chapter 20, verse 24, describing the glory of hearing the holy name from the mouth of a sadhu, or being very eager to hear about Krishna Leela. Nakamaye nata tadapyaham kachin nayatja yushmach charanam bujasavha mahatamanta rijayan mukachyuto vidatsvakarna yutamesha me vara. O Lord, I do not want liberation, I receive no pleasure in hearing any topic other than the glorious narrations of the nectar of your lotus feet. The nectar of hearing topics about you emanates from the mouths of saintly persons, from deep within their hearts. I beg only for the boon that you will give me 10,000 ears with which I can always hear the sweetness of your pastimes. This is a prayer by Prita Maharaj in 4th canto of Bhagavatam, that he wants to absorb himself in hearing Harikatha from the mouth of realized devotees. Realized devotees means that they're not speaking from their mind, or they're not memorizing something mechanically from a book, some list of shlokas, or some analogies, or some stories, and simply repeating them by rote. It's not coming from the surface of their mind, but the differentiation Prita makes is that these advanced and realized Vaishnavas, when they speak Harikatha, it comes from deep within their heart. Because it comes from deep within their heart, it has great influence. Just like in archery or in Dhanur Veda, they have the phrase in Mahabharata which indicates the extent of the draw, how far you draw the bow. So they say Arjuna was drawing the bow back to his ear. So if you have a bow and you go like this, a Dhanur, a bow, an arrow, you go boink. If you pull it back to your ear, it means you go like this. This is your ear. You're holding the bow like this. You see some paintings like this by Bhakti Siddhanta Das, my godbrother. He does paintings. He actually did paintings to illustrate the Mahabharata. So he shows the soldiers, archers in the Mahabharata, the heroes. They're pulling the bowstring back to their ear. So that's full extension, and the bow is completely bent. It's a recurve bow, so it's like an S, and it's fully bent to its fullest extension. So when you pull an arrow back that far and you let it go, it has a lot of power and a lot of speed. So with all that power and all that speed, it penetrates. What does it penetrate? It penetrates the steel armor or the iron armor that's on the chest of the hero. And your idea is you want to get that arrow through the armor, into the chest, into the heart, and kill the enemy. Dong! But if you just go out there on the battlefield and go boink, boink, then the arrows will just fall off the end of your chariot. Boink! You know, boink! Like a little kid shoots a bow. Hey, Daddy, let me shoot it. Dink! Oh, there it is. Boom! You know. So this, when realized souls speak Harikatha, they are shooting from the ear. But as Prita Maharaj, he says, I want to hear Harikatha from the Vaishnavas who are speaking from the core, deep, what he says, from the deep within their hearts. So if something is spoken from deep within the hearts, then it will penetrate through the armor of the conditioned souls. The conditioned souls are covered by armor. My steel, my covering of armor or protective covering of ego. Of ego, hankara, and buddhi, intelligence, mundane intelligence, and man, contaminated mind or foolish mind, pagoman means crazy mind, and the indriya. So all these things are covering the atma. So when a someone is speaking from deep within the core of their heart, they are a realized devotee. They may not speak one shloka. They may not even speak a verse, Sanskrit, Bengali, whatever verse. But because they're realized, that Harikatha that they're speaking has so much power that it penetrates all the coverings of the conditioned soul and goes right to the heart. Right to the heart. It makes people think, oh, yes, I should act like this. I should do like this. Makes them think and turn their mind and heart towards Krishna. So this is the qualification. This is the type of sadhu we want to associate with and hear from. So Prita is indicating that he's hearing from these type of realized souls, realized Vaishnavas, who are speaking, are fully drawing back the bow of their realization, extending the bow of their realization to the fullest extent and releasing the arrows of their mercy. And the arrows of their mercy are coming in the shape of shiksha, shikshamrita, nectarine instructions and teachings about sadhana, about tattva, about siddhanta, about lila, about sharanagati, and all these aspects of devotional life. And then he's saying that I beg only for the boon that I can hear such guitar with 10,000 ears. That means that he has a lot of eagerness to hear. Because we have two ears, and as soon as Hari Katha starts, our two ears shut, our two eyes shut, and our minds shut, and we go, good night. Especially in Bhagavatam class. Bhagavatam is the highest katha. There's no greater katha than the Srimad Bhagavatam, being spoken by the most realized soul in all of creation, Shukadeva Goswami. But when that Shukadeva Goswami is speaking, we say, oh, Shukadeva Goswami, my two ears are just too much to hear your katha. And my two eyes are feeling very heavy, so I think now it's time for me to go to sleep. But this Preeti Maharaj, he's saying that when I hear from realized souls like Shukadeva Goswami or any others that represent his line of thought or represent this Krishna conception, then I become so eager, so excited, and so enthused that I'm hearing with my two ears as much as possible. My ears are extended, just like the cow. Whenever you make a sound, then the cow, the Indian cow, his ears go wherever the sound is. You make a sound here, then the cow's ears go, they turn back, like they both, the ears turn backwards. They want to catch the sound. Oh, what's going on back there? Some funny sound. Then the sound comes in the front, then they go, whoop. They go like this, the ears turn all the way 180 degrees like this, both ears. It's like unidirectional, omnidirectional ears. This way, that way. And then they're so good that one ear can go like this and the other ear can go like that. Oh, there's something on the right side. What's that? Oh, there's something on the left side in the front. What's that? And I never, coming from America, I never saw cows like this in my life. The cows here just sit there on the side of their head and they don't go anywhere. They just have ears. I mean, Indian cows look like helicopter. Look like their ears are like the wings on a helicopter. They go this way. So what are they doing? They're trying to catch the sound of Krishna's flute. Because the nectar of Krishna's flute can come from any direction. Sometimes he's in the north playing his flute. Sometimes in the south. Sometimes in the right or the left. Sometimes he's up in the Kadamba tree. He climbs up in the Kadamba tree and he plays his flute. So then the cow's ears have to go whoop. They have to aim them vertically to catch the sound of Krishna's flute in the tree. Because when they're wandering in distant pastures, Krishna climbs a Kadamba tree so he can find out where the hell they are. So then when he sees the cows are so far away, then he takes out his long-distance flute. Like they have different kinds of guns, and they have revolvers, and they have elephant guns, and they have long guns and short guns. So Krishna has different kinds of flutes for calling for different effects. So when the cows wander far away, then he has to call them with a high-pitched flute. To get a high pitch, you need a shorter, flute, whatever that's called, the shaft, a shorter shaft. So he takes out his venu. His venu is only 6 inches long. Now when he plays his venu, it's only small. Boop, 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 boop. You know, beep, beep, beep. And a very high sound. It's like a dog whistle. And it goes very, very, and that sound, that high-pitched sound carries a long distance. Then the cows are, the cows are just listening to their munching and they're eating grass. Then Krishna plays that venu from up in the Kadamba tree where he's spotting them and seeing them. Then their ears go, and the ears turn up like this. Oh, there's some sound coming from the Kadamba tree. Then they run. Toot, toot, toot. They run over there. And they say, oh, look who's there. Hey. And they go, I'm here. That means I'm here, in case you don't know. They get humba, humba, like this. That means I'm here. Then Krishna says, he, and then he climbs down the tree and he hits them all on their noses. They put their noses up and he goes, boink, boink, boink. And then that's like a love tap. And it's like and then they feel very happy. He says, okay, get in line and go. Let's go. We're going home. So this is a nature that one is actually has ruchi for bhajan. He becomes very, very eager to hear about Krishna. He's like a cow just drinking the sound vibration from whatever direction it's coming. Wherever he can find Hari Katha, he runs there like a bird flying to the cloud of water, like a chakor, like a chatiki bird. Hey Govinda. So now the commentator is telling us, and he's translating the Bengali version of this Sanskrit verse which Bhaktivinoda Thakur has given. Now the English translation, he's saying, drops of nectar, this is Prita Maharaj glorifying Krishna, drops of nectar from your lotus feet in the form of pollen are carried by the breeze emanating from the mouths of great personalities, thus transmitting the potency of bhakti to all of us and making our lives successful. I am always ready to do anything to hear this katha. May a spark of the mood of such personalities enter my heart and submerge me in an ocean of prema. This is a very nice phrase. I am always ready to do anything to hear this Hari Katha. It reminds me, once I was in Vrindavan, and these three ladies came from Bombay. They were young ladies, about 20 or so. And I met them, I was giving a class, and I met them afterwards, and I said, who are you, or where are you going, or whatever. I never met them. I said, we're from Bombay, we're going to Haridwar tomorrow or tonight. I said, oh, what's going on there? He said, Radha Govinda Maharaj is giving Bhagavad Saptaha on Venu Gita, or maybe Gopi Gita. I think it was Gopi Gita in Haridwar. I said, oh, you have some place to stay there? Because you're three young girls, young ladies. I see you're staying with some people over there. I said, no, we don't have any place to stay. We don't have any arrangements. And we don't have any money either. we only have enough money to go there on the train and come back. We don't know where we're going to stay. I said, oh, that's interesting. I said, what about food? Oh, we don't know about food. I said, that's also very interesting. I said, this is not a very good thing, young girls going like this. I said, well, anyway, we don't care. Because we want to hear Maharaj's katha. We just want to hear his Hari katha. And whether we eat, we'll just stay there. We'll sleep at wherever the katha is. When he finishes, we'll just lie down there on the ground and sleep. Because he'll come there in the morning and speak again for 7 days, morning and evening, 6 hours a day. And if food, I don't know, somehow we'll find food here and there. I was amazed. And they came all the way from Bombay with only enough money to go up and down on a second two-tier sleeper train, which is like really something else. Having traveled on them, it's really quite a luxurious way to go. Two-tier unreserved cattle car. You know, it's like too much. Mostly, I mean, it's not so bad if nobody smoked, but everybody smokes cigarettes, and that's really hard to take. Cigarette smokes, like 1,000 people smoking cigarettes. You know, the train is made for 50 people, and there's 500 people in one bogey and on one car. You know, it's really wild. At any rate, I remarked that they've had so much eagerness to hear this Hari Katha that they had some great taste. And I guess they got out all right. Krishna took care of them. So now another verse here is given in this chapter. These are the last four verses of the chapter. And he's saying that, because what happens, Ruchi is like this. This Ruchi in Bhajan, it gets deeper and deeper, because after Ruchi comes Asakti. There's Anartanivrti, then there's Nishta, Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava, and Prema. These are the levels of progression and devotion. So at the level of Ruchi, obviously there's some Ruchi comes in Anartanivrti, a few drops. There's more Ruchi that comes in Nishta. Then there's the stage of Ruchi itself, which has its particular characteristics and attributes, which we mentioned. And then this Ruchi becomes thicker and thicker. And then with that increase in taste comes an increase in attachment. Or you can say, as attachment for Krishna increases, then your ruchi increases. It's a fact. With anything, you become attached to something and you like that thing, you like that object, and you get greater satisfaction. Because we defined, or rather, Vishnu defined ruchi as a great sense of happiness and pleasure that arises in the mind by performing the limbs of bhakti. It's not exactly a taste at the end of your tongue. But it's a mental satisfaction, a mental enjoyment and bliss that comes from practicing the limbs of bhakti, hearing and chanting, remember Krishna. This is ruchi. So as we practice more and more bhajan, we become more attached to Krishna. As we become more attached to Krishna, we experience Krishna more. As we experience Krishna more, then we relish a taste. Our mind becomes filled with the happiness of experiencing Krishna by serving Him. The more we serve Krishna, the more we experience Krishna. The more we experience Krishna, the more we become attached to Krishna. The more we become attached to Krishna, the more we relish the taste of that attachment. That attachment is taste. Because being attached to Krishna means having Krishna in your mind. And when Krishna is in your mind, He's very tasty. He's called Madhurya Purushottam, Rupa Madhurya. His form is tasty. It's sweet. His pastimes, Leela Madhurya, they're very sweet. And His prema, His love, or His affection, or His attention, or His interest in us is very sweet. And that sweetness we relish in the mind. This is ruchi. So that ruchi gets greater and greater, then becomes a sakti. We become attached. So here, at the higher end of ruchi, at the end of this chapter on ruchi bhajan, Bhaktivinoda starts to introduce this next level or stage of bhajan called a sakti. And therefore he quotes a few verses to describe this asakti that comes at the later part of ruchi. Actually, Prakash, there's a Sarartha Darshini on my desk. Can you bring that? The symptom of attachment, asakti, is that is developed by taking shelter of the holy name as described in the Bhagavatam. This is the sign of attachment to the holy name. So we described something about when we have ruchi for the holy name, then we give up this attachment to wealth and followers, men and women, and dharma and artha and kama and moksha. And we find satisfaction and fulfillment just in serving Krishna. So these are the symptoms of ruchi. And that's coming from nam. Then as we increase our attachment to nam, then there's also different signs. What happens is our attachment for the holy name increases. So this is an advanced level of ruchi, which leads to a sakti. And this is spoken by the gopis in the 29th chapter of Bhagavatam, verse 34. This is all about asakti. Or you can say, this verse will increase our ruchi. You want to develop ruchi for the holy name? Such a taste for the holy name that you will become attached to the holy name? Then you study this verse from the gopis. You read this verse, you hear this verse, and you pray that this type of feelings come in our heart. Chittam sukena bhavata paritam griheshu yan nirvisatyuta kanavapi griya kritye pado padam nachalatastava padamulad yamakatam brajamato Karavama Kimva. Gopi said to Krishna, O Chittachor, like we have Vamshichor, O stealer of the flute, and we have Vastrachor, Gopi Vastraharana, or Vastrachor. He takes away the clothing of the gopi, so this is Chittachor. O stealer of the minds, by playing on your Vamshi, you have stolen our minds, which were absorbed in household affairs. This was not difficult for you. However, having lost our minds, our working senses are not functioning, and our movements and intelligence have therefore become abnormal. Our feet do not want to leave you to go anywhere else. Please tell us then, how can we possibly return to our homes? Because this is their gopis' response to Krishna's encouraging them. It's very nice, you have come here in the middle of the night. Now you've seen the forest, and you've seen the trees and the flowers. Now your desire has been fulfilled. So now please go back to the village, because your mothers and fathers and relatives, they must be wondering where you are, where you've gone. So you shouldn't cause them any distress. And after all, it's not very proper for a young lady to meet a young man in the middle of the night in the forest. So please uphold your Sri Dharma and Laja Dharma and Loka Dharma and return to your families. And then the gopis are listening and scratching the ground with their toes, and then they're saying, well, that's very nice what you said, but actually we came here to get our minds. Because we are happily situated at home, cooking for our husbands and serving them. And then all of a sudden you played your murali. Well, here it says Vamshi. They said Vamshi. It means your flute. And when we heard that flute sound, your flute entered our ears and stole our minds. And then as soon as once you lose your mind, you become crazy. You can't function. Your senses cannot function when your mind is deranged. Or in this case, stolen. You have no mind and your senses cannot function. So how can your hands stir the food? How can you serve out food when you have no mind? So we've come here to get our minds. And you say go back, but our feet won't move. Our feet won't move without our minds giving them direction. Thinking, feeling, willing. So the willing power, it's called Ichha Shakti, willpower, Ichha Shakti has to come from the mind. So without any willpower, there can't be any action. So our feet won't move because you stole our mind. So please give us our mind. So there's a long purport here, which is quoted from Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. So I would just like to read Vishwanatha Chakravarti's commentary. It's chapter 29 of the 10th canto, verse 34. He's saying that some gopis were revealing their intense love for Krishna by saying, "O king of thieves, we did not come here with any other purpose than to recover the treasure that you stole from us." Right? The thief will steal your treasure. In this case, you have stolen our minds, but unlike other thieves, you did not have to make any great endeavor. You did this simply by blowing on your flute. When some thief comes to your house, he has to do a lot of endeavors. First, he hires a tantric. If he's in Bengal, he hires a tantric. And the tantric goes with the thieves at night. And he charges this red string with a bunch of mantras. And they go around the boundary wall. They go at the compound wall. They take this red string and they bind it all around the boundary wall 3 times. The red string. And all the doors are shut and all the chokidars, everyone's inside, everyone's in the house singing, dancing, reading, whatever they're doing. So the thieves are outside the boundary wall and the tantric's there. So he puts this string all around, the red string around the boundary wall. Then he chants mantras and he does some different tantric things. And then at a certain point when he finishes his tantric work, everyone inside that boundary wall falls asleep. They fall asleep, the chokidars, everyone falls asleep because that red string creates a certain kind of chakra, a tantric chakra. So anything inside that red string comes under the control of the tantra, the person who knows the tantra. So that becomes his territory. So then he puts his whammy on everybody inside there. So all the dogs, whatever dogs are inside that boundary wall or any chokidars, they all fall into a deep sleep. And then, outside the boundary wall, they start sawing off all the locks and everything. They saw them off. Then they open the doors and come in. And now the dog is... the chokidars... everyone's totally asleep. And then they go in the house, and they have to look around, have to find out where's the wall safe, and then they steal, or maybe the tantric has already told him, that in the top room, under the backside, behind the picture, there's a wall safe. Because the tantric's... when the tantrics go into meditation, once they put this house inside the red string, then they can, by their meditation, they can understand where is wealth. Because wealth, wherever there is wealth stored, there are some demigods called yakshas. Yakshas are servants of Kubera. They actually live in that area. So yakshas also work with these subtle beings. So these tantrics, they can communicate with the yakshas. So when they go into meditation, they say, "Oh, yakshas, are you sleeping here in this house?" And they say, "Yes, we're here. We're sleeping on this pile of gold upstairs in the bedroom, in the northeast bedroom." So then the tantrics say, "Yes, if you go upstairs in the northeast bedroom, you'll find a pile of gold." So then they go up there, and then they go in there and they catch it. So that's a lot of endeavor, the tantric and the meditation and the yakshas and all this stuff, sawing all the locks. And then they get the treasure and they run away. They run out of the house. And then they close the door and they bolt it from outside and everything. Then they cut the string. And then they go away. And then about an hour or so later, then this kind of tantric hypnotism, releases itself. And then the dogs wake up. Chokidar wakes up. And everybody wakes up. And the television's still blasting. And they go, "Oh yeah, what happened? What happened? I don't know. I was sleeping. I was watching TV, and then I fell asleep. And then somebody thinks, oh, it looks funny. I don't know. And they go upstairs. Oh, my God, I've been robbed. Oh. So usually thieves have to use a lot of endeavor. But the gopis are saying, you didn't do anything. You simply went toot, toot, toot on your flute, flute, flute. And that was not even, you didn't even come in our house. You were a few kilometers away, and the sound came in the window and went in our ears, and it stole our most valuable treasure, our very pran. Our pran sampati means the wealth of our life. You didn't have to make any great endeavor. The treasure of our minds is not some cheap thing either. Our minds were absorbed completely in our household affairs. And by stealing our minds, our whole house has been plundered. So the gopi said. And Vishnu says, the actual subtle implication of the gopi's exaggeration is this. This is what they're saying. Quote, because our mind, this is what they're really saying. This is what they're saying externally, which is also in Krishna book. You stole our minds. And Vishnu is saying, all right, they said like this, but the implied meaning, what they're really saying to Krishna, what the gopis are really saying is this. Because our minds are not at all absorbed in our homes, we don't care if our houses burn down or they prosper. Actually, our minds are absorbed in that thing, in that which brings about the perfection of all our grihas. Of course, in Sanskrit this works really nice, but in English, because griha means home, and griha also means senses. So, like Krishna is saying, oh, there, you know, you stole our minds with your flute, the gopis are saying, and our minds were absorbed in our household work. So they're saying grihas, grihas. They're actually saying our mind and senses were absorbed in our griha. It's kind of like, you know, and then they're saying, but the perfection of our grihas, which means our home or our senses, is to serve you. It's hard to work it in English, but in Sanskrit it's beautiful. Because our minds are not at all absorbed in our homes, we don't care if they burn down or prosper. Actually, our minds are absorbed in that which brings about the perfection of all our grihas, which means senses, and without which all our senses become useless. Thus, by stealing our minds, you have stolen all of our senses, including our hands, which were absorbed in household work, and also our eyes and ears. And Krishna replies, but my dear gopis, just go home for now. Let me consider the situation for a day or two, and then I will return your minds. Then the Brajagopis say, our feet refuse to move even one step. Please give back our minds. Accept us, and then we will go. Because that's why they came, to offer themselves to Krishna for his pleasure. So if they want to please Krishna, they need their minds, so their minds can move their bodies and senses for his pleasure. Please give us back our minds. Then we'll use our minds to direct our bodies for your pleasure. After you've enjoyed us in rasa dance, then we will go. But not until that time. So this is this verse indicates how much attached the gopis are to Krishna, how much asakti they have. And so, of course, this can never be imitated by conditioned souls. But Bhaktivinoda Thakura, he's including this verse in his discussion of Ruchi Bhajan by saying at the upper end of Ruchi, when Ruchi starts to move to Asakti, then similar feelings like this will come in a devotee's heart. And moreover, as I mentioned, these verses are verses for meditation and for bhajan. They're very deep. There's so many verses in the Bhagavatam, but this, he says, yes, now we're tasting some ruchi and nam. Now we want to go to the next stage, asakti. So take inspiration, take energy from the gopis' example of how much their minds are attached to Krishna. He's stolen their minds. They don't have, their minds are not with them. Their minds are totally absorbed in Krishna, his pleasure and his happiness. So this verse he gives us, we read this verse, we meditate in this verse, we pray to the gopis, and we say, oh gopis, your minds are totally attached to Krishna. And can you bless us that our minds also become similarly attached? And our working senses, our eyes and nose and hands, they're not working. They can't work in any other business but Krishna's business. As you're saying that your hands and senses can't work anymore in your household business. Household business for us means anything material. So when we become attached to Krishna, then our senses will not engage in any material activities, only engage in the service of Krishna. And then the next verse also, text 20, that verse he was talking about is Sakti, and then this again is Ruchi. This is how, that was the higher end of Ruchi, that Ruchi going to a Sakti, that one will have so much attachment for Krishna and his devotees that he'll be absorbed in this type of Harikatha. Reading about the topmost devotees like the gopis, hearing about their intense attachment, praying for their mercy for similar attachment, while chanting the holy name with great taste. But now this one goes back a little bit like down the line a little bit in Ruchi. And it says that all good qualities manifest in a devotee with Ruchi. He quotes this verse. These are all towards the end of the chapter. And that we discussed before, how the devotee who has taste, he has all these good qualities, because bad qualities come from associating with our material desires. Whenever we engage in material activities, it brings out bad qualities. So that's why he says the devotee, he gets yasyasti bhaktir bhagavati kinchana savergunas tatra samastate sura harava bhaktasya kato mahadguna manovritainasati davato bahi. Because a devotee, if you associate with material desires or material activities, that's all the modes of nature. The modes of nature are always changing. Like a chariot is always moving. The mana retainer, the mind is on a chariot, and the chariot is made of the three modes of nature, sometimes goodness, sometimes passion, sometimes ignorance. But a devotee is fixed. One who's fixed with a taste for Harinam, he's always engaged in Krishna's service. So he's not affected by the modes of nature. He's peaceful day in, day out. He's tolerant. So his qualities are a product of spiritual attainment. So they're fixed. His qualities don't change. His spiritual qualities, they don't change. It's not he's peaceful today and he loses it tomorrow, or he loses it for 1 week, or he becomes agitated. But this verse explains how the devotee is not on the mana retainer, because he's fixed in the service of the Lord. So his mind is not running here and there. His mind is only going from one service to the next service to the next service. He's hearing, then he's chanting, then he's remembering, then he's cooking, then he's sleeping, then he's bathing. Everything he's doing is for the service of Krishna and for the pleasure of Krishna. And he can connect everything he's doing to Krishna. So there's no chance for his mind to run away or be carried away by the modes of nature, passion, ignorance, or goodness. So he's steady. And this is it. And all these good qualities are steadily with him. They don't leave him. So now, he's saying, these are the last two verses. Yeah, before there's the meditation, Astakali Lila, for the Jatarati Sadaka, who actually has awakened his bhav, and what he'll meditate on when he's chanting the holy name. Because obviously, when you have bhav, you also have full expression of ruchi. And that's how he concludes the chapter. But in these two verses, he's revealing that now, again, these are the experiences of one on the highest level of ruchi. Ruchi, at the level of ruchi in bhajan, the holy name removes the ego and reveals a sarup. Sometimes people say, everyone will say that one's siddhadeha or spiritual form, it can only be revealed by guru. And that's a fact, without a doubt. But that's the main, you can say the main line, you say guru. Because guru gives you seva of Krishna. And guru gives you the holy name and other mantras to meditate and chant. And to engage in service of Krishna, Radha and Krishna, and to meditate upon them, and to chant their holy names, either in japa or in mantra. or kirtan. So in all three of these aspects, either in the holy name or in service or in guru, guru is there. So sometimes, generally, guru directly gives the siddhadeha in consultation or a meeting with a disciple, monitoring his spiritual attainment and realization and his adhikar, then guru will give. But it's also told in numerous places that the holy name can also reveal one's siddhadeha and one's service itself. But this is actually another way of saying guru. They say, oh, the holy name. It's not that the holy name independently of guru will reveal the sarup, or it's not that devotional service or engaging in Radha Krishna's service will reveal one's spiritual body or sarup independently of guru. Guru is there in all three states. So here he's saying at the level of, when one develops at the highest end of ruchi, before sakti, one enters the platform of sakti and exhibits the qualities therein, ruchi and bhajan, nam itself, will begin to manifest the sarup. Because he's saying that bhakti destroys egoism arising from falsely identifying the body with the self. In other words, ruchi removes the ego and reveals the sarup. And this verse from 4th canto, 11th chapter, verse 30, describes that. Because as long we can't realize the sarup, actually realize our siddha sarup, as long as we're absorbed in this material body. Abhiman means our sense of, our way of thinking, our way of conceiving, our identity, or how we see ourselves. We say Purusha Abhiman. That means to have the mentality of being the Purusha, or the enjoyer, Purusha Abhiman. And it's another way it's described here, Bhaktivinoda says, identifying the body with the self, I am the body, it's called Deha Abhiman. Deha means body. But we are supposed to attain the Sarupa Abhiman, means Seva Abhiman. Have the mentality that I am simply Krishna's servant. It's called, or kin, you can say Kinkari Bhav for a Manjari. Ai Nanda Tanuchu Kinkaram. In fact, that's the next verse. This is the fourth verse we're studying. The next verse in Shikshastakam is Ai Nanda Tanuchu Kinkaram. O Nanda Nandan, O son of Nanda, I am a Kinkari. But before you get the Sarup, before one attains the Sarup of a Kinkari, or the Sarup of a Manjari, you have to attain the Bhav. First Bhav, then Deha. Not Deha, then Bhav. And that's everywhere. 11th canto, Bhagavad Gita, everywhere. Yam yam vapi smaran bhavan, tyajit yanti kalevaram. Krishna is telling in the 8th chapter of Gita that yam yam vapi smaran bhavan, tyajit yanti kalevaram. He's talking about death. When a materialist or anyone dies, tyajit kalevaram, when they give up the material body, they get their next body according to the bhav that they're remembering, smaran bhav. What is the type of feelings and sentiments and mood and natural liking that they have in their mind and heart? Bhav determines body. First bhav, then body. So this deha abhiman, this mentality that I'm this material body, has to be replaced with kinkiri abhiman or seva abhiman, that I am Krishna's actual servant. I have the bhav of a servant. I have the mentality, the natural liking, natural feeling. I have a feeling, a natural liking and sentiment of being a slave. Krishna's slave, his servant. So that, when that bhav gets very great, Krishna's saying, oh, you have the right bhav. Now I'll give you a body which will match your bhav. Because without the bhav, you can't, that's why we say gopi bhav. But first gopi bhav, then gopi deha. It's not first gopi deha, gopi bhav. It's children's hour. Crying for Krishna. One should chant the holy name of the Lord like the genuine crying of a child for his mother. So his father is here, his sister is here, his brother is here, but his mother is not here. So they're exiting now from the stage, maybe returning later. They have to regroup and rehearse new lines. At any rate, so this verse is telling that. And then maybe we'll continue this tomorrow, because our time is out. But this is a very important conception. Bhav. And that story is in 11th canto. There was one, the story of this wasp who catches a little worm, puts him in his nest, and he's just thinking. He's just thinking about his predator. He's, oh, he's going to eat me. What's he going to do? He's just thinking, and his bhav, his whole mentality is taking the shape of that predator, his bhav. And then when he dies thinking of that predator. So the next life he gets the body of that predator. But it's first his bhav, his thinking, his feeling, his bhav, his abhiman. It's in 11th canto. The same way a man is married, he becomes very attached to his wife generally. He's always thinking of his wife. And his mind takes the shape of his wife. He develops a bhav, feelings for the wife, sentiments. He becomes very attached due to mamta. My wife. And he speaks like that, he thinks like that, he feels like that. So that means his mind takes the shape of that thinking, feeling, and willing. That's a bhav. It's called antar bhav, your internal feelings, your internal bhav. So then, next life, what kind of rupam do you get? What kind of deha, what kind of body do you get? Hari bhav, Prabhu. You get a lady's body. You get a lady's body. Or maybe a dog, a female dog. It depends on what kind of activities you engage in. If you engage in non-human activities, then you certainly don't get a human body. But you get the same gender. So this is bhav shapes the body. So that's why from day one, Guru is trying to change our bhav. We have Purusha bhav, and he's trying to turn it into Prakriti bhav. Prakriti means, Purusha means I am the enjoyer. And Prakriti means I am enjoyed. Purusha means I am the enjoyer. This world is for me. God made everything for me to enjoy. He's provided everything for my pleasure. This is what Christians preach. And it's a very convenient philosophy to be an enjoyer. This world is made for my enjoyment. This is called Purusha Abhiman. The mentality of I am it. I am the enjoyer. Now the flip side of that, the opposite of that, is Prakriti Abhiman. I am enjoyed. I am in this world. I am to be enjoyed by the creator of this world. This world belongs not to me, but the creator. This world belongs to God and is meant to be enjoyed by him, not me. I am the enjoyed. This world is the enjoyed. It should be enjoyed by God. I should be enjoyed by God. So that's why the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says it starts here. Jivera Swarupaya Krishnera Nityadas. This is the Swarupa of the Jiva. Yes, Jiva, you have a sarup. You have an eternal spiritual form, an eternal spiritual deha, siddha deha, spiritual body. And it has so many symptoms, specifically 11 different attributes that will finally be understood and realized. But those attributes, which are the attributes of your spiritual form, they grow or they manifest from the bhav. No bhav, no rupam. Even someone gives you the rupam, but if you don't have the bhav, you'll never attain it. You have to develop the bhav yourself, and then your bhav will attract the bhava bhakti from the hearts of the Nitya Parishads, and then their bhav will mix with your bhav, and then it'll be revelation of your siddhadeya and 11 symptoms of your siddhadeya, ekadash bhav. Ekadash bhav. This is called, it's not called ekadash. Ekadash means 11. Ekadasi, ekadash. Ekadash bhav. That these symptoms of your deha, first there's the bhav. First comes the bhav, and then 11 symptoms manifest. And our bhav must be mixed with the bhav of Rupa Manjari, Rati Manjari, or our perfected Guru Sakhi, in the case of Manjari bhav. So that's why there's so much emphasis on Seva bhav. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and all his servants, especially Nityananda, are the personification of Seva, Seva, Seva. Serve the Vaishnavas, serve the name, serve the Dham, serve everyone. I am a servant. Das, 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 and das. This is Dasi Bhav. The feminine is Dasi Bhav. So first Bhav, then Rupam. This is a basic teaching of Rupa and Sanatan. Ado Sharatata Sarasanga Bhajana Kriya Narta Nivritita Nishta Tata Ruchi Ato Asakti Bhava Prem. So everything we're doing is to come to bhav, is to have the bhav. Beginning in sadhana bhakti, there must be bhav there. There must be a bhav. What is a bhav? We can't go from sadhana bhakti to bhava bhakti to prema bhakti unless we have bhav. So bhav is also there in sadhana bhakti. All of our actions in sadhana bhakti, vaidhi and raganuga sadhana, must be injected with or suffused with bhav. And the bhava evolves and takes different shapes as we get closer and closer to bhava bhakti and prema bhakti. We're doing preparatory bhav. Seva bhav, seva abhiman, surrender, sharanagati. It's like this. Progressive path of bhajan. So, any questions there? Yes.
You mentioned in the morning, Maharaj, that Uttama Bhakti can be practiced by three kind of devotees, not just by the Premi Bhakta.
Yes.
Prem and sadhana.
Yeah.
You elaborate on the first one.
Huh?
You elaborate on the first one. Bhav, sadhana.
Yeah, the Uttama Bhakti, in other words, nectar devotion, verse 11, that's in not a different class. But Uttama Bhakti begins, this is the book, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu begins verse 1 after Mangalacharana. There's 10 verses of Mangalacharana, invocation prayers. The first chapter, 11th verse, which is the very beginning of the book, Rupa Goswami says, this is Uttama Bhakti. Then he explains the characteristics after defining it, six characteristics. Then who's qualified to follow it, who has it, how to attain this bhakti, which is transcendental from those ragatmika bhaktas. Then this bhakti has different levels, sadhana, vaidhi sadhana, raganuga sadhana, and then bhava bhakti, prema bhakti. This is all the discussion in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. So the definition of uttam bhakti goes throughout. But what happens is that when we understand a definition, then as sadhakas we strive to fulfill the requirements of this definition. Although we actually fulfill it completely at the level of prema. Like the perfect exemplars of Uttama Bhakti is Radharani and the gopis. They are also anyabhilashita shunyam, jnana karmadhyad avritam. But at that level, their Uttama Bhakti is perfect. But at the level of a sadhaka, vaidhi sadhaka, day one, he should understand. That's why he's saying, understand very clearly. And there's a huge purport, and we spent 7 days on this class, so it's not fair to ask the question since you weren't in the class. But we spent 7 days trying to define what is Uttama Bhakti. So hearing this definition and understanding the various aspects and limbs of it, then the vaidhi sadhaka will try to apply it and follow it to the best of his ability. Although there may be some coverings, the vaidhi sadhaka, at the level of sadhana bhakti, there's some coverings of karma, there's some coverings of jnana, there's some aspirations for wanting to go back home, back to Godhead, and there's all kinds of mixtures there. There may be karma mixed in, there may be jnana mixed in, but at least he knows that I see these, because I have the standard of measurement, because I know what uttam bhakti is, therefore I can recognize I know what the real thing is, so then I can look at myself and see, and say, I want to attain this, and I want to follow this, and this is what I'm striving for, and therefore I can eliminate these things that are keeping me as a sadhaka, at the level of sadhana, from actually practicing uttam bhakti. But if you don't even know what the standard is, you actually think, oh, I'm okay, I'm practicing bhakti, it's okay. So even in the very beginning, that's why he's saying, this is the beginning of my book. Now everyone clearly understand what is uttam bhakti. Now start practicing bhakti. And work very sincerely and diligently, and by the mercy of Rupa Goswami and other acharyas and guru, one will quickly come to the platform of uttam bhakti. For example, anyabhilashita shunyam. It says, anyabhilashita shunyam. One should be free from... It says that uttam bhakti, free from the ta, or the tendency, the very swabhav of uttam bhakti, is he doesn't have even any tendency to desire separately from Krishna. The desire... So one who's beginning can't say that. No, I have this is uttam bhakti, so I have to work at this. I have to cleanse... Oh, holy name. Oh, Namprabhu, please cleanse the core of my heart, because my basic inner tendency is to enjoy. And I see that this is not really uttam bhakti. So I want uttam bhakti. And I sincerely want this. So please change the tendency of my heart. Please change my swabhav. I'm actually an enjoyer, but I'm pretending to be a devotee. So it's a knife in the hand of the surgeon, and we have so many tumors in our mind and heart, cancerous tumors that have to be cut out. So this verse is like a knife to cut out those tumors. Very powerful verse. You didn't hear the classes, but in the commentaries is saying that this is the base. The whole Bhagavatam is simply a purport on this verse. The whole Brihad Bhagavatamrita is a purport in this verse. All the books of the Goswamis are only explaining the meaning of this one verse. What is Uttam Bhakti? So once we... That's why this... and I was also saying that this is the most important verse. If you're only going to memorize or learn one verse, then learn this one verse and learn it completely and put it into practice more and more and more each and every day. Anya bilashita shunyam jnana karmadi anavritam anukulyena krishnanu shilanam bhaktir uttama. Any other question? Maybe about the class, yes? I don't know if I heard, because I can't hear very well. Someone can hear it and then tell me, maybe. Yeah, I think you didn't hear clearly what I was saying. I said, Guru he's giving the Seda Deya, but there's one key word that I said which you didn't quite hear. I said realization of the Seda Deya depends on actually attaining Bhava Bhakti and having Bhav. Guru can give Seda Deya. So now, this is called Siddha Pranali. This is a process. The word Pranali means the process by which you can become Siddha, perfect. If you get Siddha Pranali and you don't become perfect, you haven't realized your Siddha Deya. It's one thing, you get your Ekadash Bhav and he says you're so-and-so Mandri and your complexion is like this and this is your dress and this is your Seva and this is your Seva Kunj and this is your age and this is your Diksha Patra. So now you say, it doesn't mean you have your Siddha Deya. You have to, realizing it means that when you come to the level of Bhava Bhakti, when you actually have attained Gopi Bhav, then you will actually see that Siddha Deya. It's not that you just look at a piece of paper and say, oh, this is me, and I should identify that this is me, and I'm not anything but this, and let me meditate on Yoga Pit, and let me do this and that sadhana. That's all sadhana, and still you have to come to the platform of Bhava Bhakti by having that undercurrent of Bhava. Because that Bhava, without that Bhava, even though you've been given Siddha Deya, you will not realize your Siddha Deya if you don't have the Bhava. You can get your Siddha Deya in kindergarten, in anartha nivritti or a dosh shraddha, without any shraddha or anything. Forget anartha nivritti. You don't even have to, have a shraddha. And someone can say, look, you have no shraddha, you have no sarasanga, you have no diksha, listen, I'll give you a siddha deha. It can also be done. But that doesn't mean you've realized it. Realized it means you see Krishna, you see the sarup of Krishna, and you see your siddha deha. You exactly see it in your heart and spurti. And then you see it, and then you enter in, it's called Swarasikhi meditation. Then you enter into the Leela, and it flows like the Ganga. One Leela to the other, and that Leela is just flowing like the Ganga. You don't have to think, oh, now it's 3 o'clock. What are Krishna doing? And you read some book, and you think, I'm there. This is not realized, this is not being realized in the Siddha Deha. There's a big difference between someone, it's a fact. I said, Guru can give holy name. When the holy name gives, or Seva gives, that's coming from Sarup Shakti. And the Guru, he's representing Sarup Shakti. He, out of his causeless mercy, he may give you something to encourage you. Yeah, okay, you're interested. Okay, you try. Here, you try. It's his mercy. He'll give you at the level of Narta Nivriti. But still, you have to do your homework. You have to come to the level of Bhava. If you don't come to the level of Bhava, you'll die and take another birth and meet another Guru, and again, he'll give Siddha Deya. And again, you have to do Sadhana Bhakti and Sadhana Bhajan and come to the level of Bhava. This is a fact. You'll see. You'll see anyone who has Siddhadeya. See how many have realized their Siddhadeya. It's a long way. It's a great gift. It's great fortune. But don't be be grateful and gratitude for the mercy of Guru if you have such an attainment. But try to understand what all the teachings of Guru. Because I'm sure that your Guru, if you have, he will also agree with me. If we're in Vaidhi Sadhana or not even in Rag and you can get Siddhadeya, there's no Rag there. There's no genuine greed or attachment. That's a stroke of mercy. But still, to actually realize it, it's one thing to have some outline. You have some outline. It's an outline, it's an encouragement pointing you in the right direction. So it's very good. And some very rare individuals have it sufficiently advanced in previous lives, so they're practically, although it appears that they're just beginning, and you may think that you may think he's just beginning, and you're saying he's at the level of Anartha Nivritti, but he may be at the level of Bhava Bhakti when he comes into this life, from last life. So then Guru gives Siddhadeya, and very quickly he realizes it, like the people in this Jiva Dharma. They were so advanced. They were chanting Harinam and they were having ecstatic symptoms. After a few weeks, they're chanting Harinam, these two characters in the Jiva Dharma. And then within a few months, they got their Siddhadeya and then they're having Spurti. So not that many people I've met from the West that have Siddhadeya are exhibiting ecstatic symptoms when they chant the holy name of Krishna. I haven't met. And it's a great gift, but we have work to do. Don't misunderstand. I'm not. I'm trying to be quite transparent in what I'm presenting. Anything else?
Yeah.
There, you'll see in Vaishnav philosophy in general, and even in one group of Vaishnavas specifically, you'll see different understandings. If you see Ramanujacharya or Madhvacharya and Vishnu Swami, just take example, what is the identity of the Atma, Jivatma? And they have different philosophies. What is the actual identity of the Atma? So when you take even Gaudiya Vedanta or Gaudiya Vedanta philosophy, you'll see different understandings of these points, and especially this verse. Some will say that this means Nitya Siddha Bhavasya or Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem, because there's also a verse in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that those that are Nitya Siddha, those Nitya Siddha living entities like Rupa Manjari and Rati Manjari, the Ragatmikas, They have this prema. This prema is actually the Swarup Shakti of the Lord. They have this prema, Nitya Siddha Krishna prema. And Sadhya Kabunai. This Kabunai means this is not a Sadhya. This is not a goal that can be attained. This has to be given. And all you can do is Shravanadi Shuddha Chitte. From our side, you can do hearing and chanting and try to purify the chit. And if they're pleased, then they will give this prema. It doesn't come from inside the living entity, it comes from outside. There's explanations like this by Gaudiya Acharyas. They're telling like this. Nitya Siddha Bhavasya. This Nitya Siddha Bhav is eternally existing, not within us, not within a jiva, but within Nitya Siddhas, like Rupa Manjari and other Ragadmika Bhaktas. And a similar point is there in Nectar Devotion. He says, it's not by sadhana we attain sadhya. Sadhya means prem seva of Radharani. That is the goal. But sadhana itself, sadhana bhakti, the goal is prem seva. You have to listen clearly. The goal, the sadhya, the goal means sadhya, is the prem seva, or revelation of sarup, receiving siddhadeya, and serving Radha and Krishna. Say, let's keep on one bhav. Serving Radha and Krishna, Madhurya bhav, or Mantri bhav, Bhavalas rati. Rupa Goswami calls this a particular type of stai rati, or stai bhav called Bhavulas rati. So that is the goal, that is the sadhya. But this goal is not attained by sadhana. That is said everywhere. But sadhana, which is Shravanadi Shuddha Chitte, sadhana, hearing, chanting, remember, it purifies the consciousness and it creates a certain qualification because this is prescribed by Shastras. Then, if the Ragatmika Bhaktas, if they are pleased, when we advance, because on our side we can advance sadhana bhakti, and then even to go to raganuga sadhana, that depends on mercy coming from above. Mercy from an acharya of raganuga bhakti last life or this life. And then we begin rag. Even that's mercy. And then to go to bhava bhakti, that's more mercy that comes from above. So we're doing sadhana, but that sadhana will not bring us to the prem seva. It will just make us eligible. You can say qualify us, but it's not cause and effect. Bhakti is totally independent. Bhakti is totally independent. It's not dependent. It's called ahoituki, causeless. Ahoituki means hetu. Hetu means cause. It's without cause. There's nothing you can do to make bhakti happen. There's nothing you can do to make bhava or prema happen. But sadhana is such that it attracts the attention of the Lord. And we can, because you can do sadhana, it says like Krishna's Kavya, you can do Vaidhi sadhana for thousands of years and not come to rag until you get the mercy of a Vaishnava or the Lord directly. So we're doing sadhana, and then if some Ragatmika Bhakti is pleased by our chanting of Astakams, by our Guru Seva, or our Guru himself, if he's in that level of bhava or prema, then he can give blessings. And that blessings will give us the goal that we're attaining, that we're wishing to attain, the prema seva, or to attain our siddhadeya as mandris, or attain a siddhadeya as a mandri, to serve Radharani's lotus feet. That's the sadhya, but sadhana will not give that sadhya. This is the point. It's very clearly told. So in this verse, many acharyas, Gaudiya acharyas, they explain it like that. And some Gaudiya acharyas say that actually the jiva, because he's mamayavamsho jiva loke jiva bhuta sanatana, Krishna says in Gita, the jiva is Krishna's eternal part and parcel. And Krishna has three aspects. He has sandini, samvit, and ladini. And so the jiva, he also has samvit, ladini, sandini, samvit, and ladini within him. But that ladini aspect is, and that samvit aspect is somewhat weak. It's called chit shakti. Bhakti note says it's weakness. This is how many acharyas are explaining like this. There's a weakness. The sandini is there. Sandini is existence. You can't exist without sandini potency. But you see, generally, the jiva is existing. But his knowledge is very weak. He's in ignorance. So the samvit, which is knowledge, potency is very weak. And ladini means bliss or joy or love. It's also very weak. So we see that jivas, conditioned souls, are basically ignorant and unhappy. They're ignorant and unhappy. But because their ladini aspect, which is such ananda, you can say, such an ananda, right? Such an ananda. The ladini or the ananda aspect, or the chit or the samvit aspect, is weak in the jiva because he's so far removed from the Lord, because he's tatasta. So when he comes in this, when he gets his body, that aspect is weak. So sometimes they use the word dormant. And then another part of you say, oh, that this shakti can't be dormant. This is a matter of, it's a philosophical point. Many acharyas will present it in different ways. So I showed one way. Now another group of very realized acharyas in Gaudiya Vedanta will say that the jiva, he has a very weak potency of ladini and samvit. But that's his nature. So this can increase. If he mixes this potency, if he mixes his weak samvit and weak ladini with the sarup shakti of the Lord, which comes through transcendental knowledge. In other words, shravanadi shuddha chitte. If you hear and chant the name of Krishna, nam, rup, guna, and lila of Krishna. Krishna's nam, his rup, his guna, and his lila are all sarup shakti. Sarup shakti means unlimited ladini, unlimited samvit, and unlimited sandini. Then this full chit shakti, of the name, rup, nam, rup, guna, lila of Krishna, according to how much you contact it, and especially if it's Shudanam, if you chant Shudanam, which has all the potency of the Lord, that comes into the heart. Golokara Premadana Harinam Sagartan. That comes into the heart and it mixes with that very minute Sandini and Samvit which is in the heart. And then that increases it. And as that increases, then one can actually realize his potential to serve the Lord in a particular individual capacity, which has been designated since time immemorial by the Lord himself. So some acharyas say, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem, Sadhya Kavanai. Yes, Nitya Siddha Krishna Prem, it's not the Sadhya, they agree. But Shravanadi Shuddha Chitte Koriya Udai, that when a chitta is cleansed, then this can udai. Udai means appear. The word udai means appear, or it can rise. It can arise or be reflected in the chitta. In other words, the soul can actually, this prema can rise. It's not there. It's not something you can attain, but it can arise by the mercy of the Lord. And from our side, we do the hearing and chanting. And then when our hearing and chanting is so pure, it contacts this chit shakti or potency of the Lord, and then it increases the minute chit potency of the Atma, and then it increases, and then that prema rises from the within. Many acharyas say this. So it depends on how, what school of, you can say, Gaudiya Vedanta you're following. Both are correct. You can't say this, they're right, this group is right, this group is wrong.
In Jain Dharma, we see more of the mercy flowing from the Guru, the disciple, the first part. And in Krishna Samhita, Bhakti and Thakur, he sees about Haradani, Samhita and Sandini, even Jiva has. So is that the second?
I'm not following exactly what you're trying to say.
In Jain Dharma, Maharaj, we see the mercy flowing from the Guru, the disciple.
Yeah, but the same, the point, the disciple means the Jiva, and the Jiva has these same three aspects of the Satchitananda. Radhi. So this one has to, I mean, in these, just like, for example, someone may study philosophy, and if they study Ramanuja or Madhva or how they're describing the Atma, they say, oh, that doesn't make sense. This seems to make sense. Or one, or makes sense, you can say Yantirudani Maya, that Krishna, he's directing the living entities. You go here, you go there. Some people go to Madhva, some people go to Ramanuja, Vishnu Swami. And that makes sense to them and they follow it. So whatever line one finds, whatever line of mercy, or you can say Siddhanta, one comes to one, which appeals to one and attracts one's intelligence and consciousness, then he follows that line wherever it goes. As far as it goes, this is as far as your faith will go. You follow the line of truth that you've discovered.
In both the cases, the Harinam is given from the Guru, it's taken from the Guru only. So it's basically the Guru.
I said that. I said that either through service, when our service becomes so intense, even through service itself, one can realize their sarup, or through the holy name, or from Guru. But all of it's related to Guru. Without Guru, there's no service, and without Guru, there's no holy name.